Wellness Marketing Show. Hi, I'm Alex Belding, the co-founder of Webrick. Welcome to the Headless Marketing Show, a podcast all about digital marketing and e-commerce with a focus on emerging marketing technologies and methods. In each episode, we talk to marketing leaders as they outline their thoughts and visions around modern marketing and the future of the web. If you are interested in building great customer experiences online and creating strong digital marketing strategies, then this is a podcast you don't want to miss. The Headless Marketing Show is brought to you in part by our sponsor, Webrick. Webrick is a managed website service provider and delights their customers with custom websites that rank well in search and start conversations with their visitors. From e-commerce to blogging, Webrick has the right service level to meet your needs and exceed your expectations. Visit their website today to learn more at www.webrick.com. That's Webrick, WEBRIQ.com. Be sure to subscribe to this show wherever you find your podcasts. Today we'll be talking with Ryan Hornack. He is the Director of Marketing at Fifth Wheel Freight. In our conversation, we talk a lot about how marketers can better communicate and manage marketing projects with other departments. Ryan has some great ideas around how to frame projects and then incorporate other team members so that the project runs smoothly while also making sure the desired outcome is achieved. We also talk about how to develop marketing campaigns for non-traditional reasons, specifically around recruitment. Ryan sees this as a whole new frontier in the marketing world. Brands that understand how to develop and deploy these specific marketing campaigns will have a leg up on companies running more traditional recruitment strategies. If you're looking to run better projects, or more uniquely, if you're looking to find and hire better people, then this will be a great episode for you to listen to. Let's start the show. Ryan, thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the show is about, you know, modern marketing techniques, technologies, and just topics of discussion that surround marketing. And I'm always interested to hear, like, if you were to boil marketing down to a sound bite, right? It's a massive topic, but what is your kind of belief system, or if you could just put a soundbite together on what marketing is? I'm always curious to hear.
Yeah, so I boil this down when I'm communicating with, like, my boss or people outside of the field that I work with, and it's image, reputation, communication, and reputation, right? So it's when you think about all those different fields right there, and all those different points, that if something under those is always tied to marketing, if it's not directly related to marketing. And it's there's a lot that go under that. But if you're talking about something that pertains to image, reputation, likeness, it's going to be a marketing topic.
Absolutely. Well, and you said something there that I think actually we hinted on this in our earlier conversations. How does a marketer communicate to non-marketers, right? So you said right there when talking to the boss, right? Because generally not in the marketing department. I assume in your company, your boss is not in the marketing department, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So how do you go about communicating with folks that aren't in the marketing department on projects and on marketing-related things?
Yeah, so that's it's an ever-evolving challenge, right? So, I mean, because whenever somebody within our field looks at a project, whenever they look at a deliverable, they look at it with an outsider's perspective whenever they're discussing whether that works or whether that doesn't work. They might be looking at an image and they like the way the graphic looks or way the colors look, and they might think that really pops and they just think it's eye-catching. But us as marketers, we're thinking, who's our target audience? What message do we want to resonate? What is the hierarchy of this? What do we want to bring attention to? What is our end goal out of this? All of that matters to me. We want it to look good, and then we want it to be on brand. But I need to accomplish all of those things out of that deliverable or out of that graphic. Whereas an outsider or a non-marketer might look at it and be like, I think that looks cool or that looks pretty. But there's a lot more that goes into it with copy and content in the end goal than just simply that looks cool. And I hope it looks cool because that's always the end goal. Yeah, but
it should, right?
That's not my number one priority, right? My number one priority is create action.
Well, absolutely. And so when you're running a project and working across the organization, do you find that you kind of have to kind of pull people back and like get off of the track of looks and aesthetics and into, you know, the key performance indicators of the campaign or the website or whatever the element that you're working in at any given time is? Is that kind of like a constant struggle?
It's not yet. It's an ever-evolving challenge. And what we'll do is we'll just explain. So we'll bring up different examples for instance, for like an advertisement we're about to run, something like that. So we'll bring up different examples and we'll get feedback of what we like and what we don't like. And then we'll just simply explain, this is what this will accomplish and this is what that will accomplish. Here's why they're different. And here's the different that we're going to bring attention, or we're trying to create a result in this manner through this form of the advertisement. And then we're going to try to create a result in a different manner through that form of the advertisement. We're going to try to lead to the same end goal, and then we're going to discuss which one is the most effective strategy to, in terms of layout and action, and where's my eye going when I look at that advertisement? Is it going to what I want to resonate at the end of the day? Or am I being distracted by a different element within that advertisement that's going to take my attention away from what I really want the consumer to take in? So that's what we'll try to explain as we're working on that type of project, because that's the end goal. We want whatever that drive home message is, we want them to remember and then take it on and then create action out of it. So it's an ever evolving why we're doing it the way we're doing it, just diving into the details behind it, because they're not necessarily on the day to day of the project. They're anybody that might be collaborating with us is coming in after the project, more or less in its final phase, not in beta, right?
Do you bring people in earlier, like during the creative brief, or is that a dangerous scenario as well? Like, I mean, in my field, right, we receive creative briefs and it's like, oh, you put 15 seconds into this. Thank you so much. We'll be able to do a lot with this, right? Do you have the same issue kind of when you're communicating to non-marketing folk in that briefing process as well?
Well, right. So the early stages of the project, right? Whenever you're gathering your information, you know, i.e. the creative brief, right? So you can see challenges in that, because if you bring somebody in too early, you might start to get, there might kind of put the project, it might make the project take longer. It's probably the best way to put it. Because right. There is how we start the creative process, how we start our discussions, how we start discussing layout. Somebody who's coming in who doesn't work with it hands-on day to day to day might kind of hold the process back, because my marketing team, we already know how to accomplish, where to start, where to go about it, or how to effectively and efficiently brainstorm to get to where we want to be before we bring in approval, we bring in other departments to collaborate, to talk about what message they want to drive. Like if it's a recruiting advertisement, like talent acquisition, like what message do you want to drive as a talent acquisition team? Like, we need your opinion on this. We'll bring them in when we're ready to finalize the messaging to make sure I'm on point with their message versus what is the best layout? Is this the best image? How do we simplify that copy? What call to action do we need? Where is it, right? All the specs of the advertisement, who's going to be seeing it, who's our target audience, you know, all of that. We will take care of all of that prior to bringing them in, just because that we're going to be less efficient as a department if we don't.
So then when you're talking to non-marketing folks within Fifth Wheel, you're more or less talking about like, okay, are we approved to go put ad spend behind this, right? I mean, or are we approved to publish this to the website, or are we approved to, you know, to send out this this campaign via our email marketing tool? Kind of you're in the approval stage a lot with your with folks outside of the org, inside the org, but outside the department.
Yeah, so the problem. So I mean, yes and no. So there's, I mean, we run plenty of campaigns that I'm the final say on the campaign.
Yeah.
Especially on the content marketing perspective. The approval part and the collaborative part will come whether we want to make sure the message that is being driven by a different department matches what we want to drive as a marketing team. So right, we want to simplify our messaging and we want it to be very concise as a department, but are we going to match exactly what is being pushed through our sales team or through our talent acquisition team, or even if from our accounting team when they're talking with, you know, their contacts, their vendors. You want to make sure it matches. If it's a much bigger project and a much bigger animal, like with a bigger expense behind it, that's when we're going to be needing to get in our executive level team to come in to make sure, based off of this expense, how are we going to accomplish it? What are you doing to get this done? That's when that will come in, and that's when we collaborate with the executive levels. So there's different levels of collaboration, and there's different times when the approval process will come through. And there's times where we're just knocking stuff out. There's plenty of times we're just knocking stuff out just because, you know, their trust is in us, and we have a good idea of what we're doing and how to push the right content and generate the right engagement, especially through the our social platforms, most importantly, right? So,
well, and organizationally, right, like generally speaking, folks want the department they're using. For example, I'm in your IT department. I want to run a campaign through you guys. They're going to let you do what you do. Like, generally speaking, though, like you said, right? Like, if we let them in too early, they can slow the project down. If you let them in too late, right? They, you have to like go over all the basics of why we're doing what we're doing, or like, what are some things that you guys do to kind of streamline that communication, or just make your interdepartmental communications, you know, smooth, so that you can hit your directives, you know, put your campaigns live, but then also, you know, achieve the goals that everybody is looking for, you know, across the org.
Yeah. So what we'll do is I'll just start to collaborate with where is the push from your department. So if, where is that push? And then I'll start to get a feel for, before we even build out a campaign, or before we even take on an initiative, or before we even take on a new like community outreach project or something like that, I'll just see, where's the push from your department? What messages are, like, I'll try to gain as much information before I even start on it as I possibly can. And then whenever we hit that, not hit a wall, but hit that part where I know, like, I'm pretty confident in this, then I'll bring them in to say, is this what we're going for on your end? This is what matches on our end. Here's why we did it. And then we'll finalize. We won't take it the whole way through final. We'll mock up a few examples, right? So we're not finishing an entire project and then having to scale back, because right now you're talking about double work. So try to do your homework ahead of time, collaborate in the middle just for reinforcement that we're on the right track. And then whenever you go to show, if you need to see for them to get their eyes on it, you don't do it before it's completely finalized, right? Before we go through spacing, before we go through spelling errors, before we go through minimal changes to copy, before we go through all of our brand standards and sizing and placement and timing and all that, we won't even go that far with the project before we know for sure it's 100% right. Or else if we have to bring it back, now we're doing double work.
And right.
Obviously nobody wants to do double work. So.
And so you bring them in early, not necessarily at the creative brief level. You just bring them in more at like, what's the desired outcome? What's the operation we're going to do? 10,000 foot view. Then you guys as a department go, you know, you do your content creation, you do your storyboarding or whatever your process is internally.
Yep.
You go to mock-up, and then what kind of tools do you use? Like, I'm always kind of curious to find out what folks are doing to maybe, because a lot of times too, like non-marketing people, they need to see some glitz and glam. If you just show them a Word doc, hey, this is your new landing page, they'll go, huh? You know, I don't understand, right?
Well, that is a challenge. That's a very good point. And that is a challenge, because what I'll send is like, here's what we're going to be putting into this. And please like note that this isn't what it's going to look like.
Right.
But it'll just be like an email full of content copy. And that is a very big challenge, because like I'm putting in parentheses, like here's how it should look, or like disclaimers throughout that, just to make sure that whenever they're reading it, no, it's not going to look like this. This isn't going to be the end result. We haven't done any layout. We haven't done our final edits, but here is our content. And it looks like a bunch of bullet points right now.
Yeah.
Right? And just a bunch of random ideas on a sheet of paper, but here's probably what's going to go into it. And then after we go through it together, right now after I get the green light on this thing, it's going to look completely different, but we're going to get going after it, and now it's going to go live. But I don't want to send this live until we go through that content edit and it doesn't look, it looks like just a bunch of random words, and they're like, I can't believe this turns into that. A turns into B, but that's just the marketing world, and that's just how we operate. And like, yeah. I know in my head what it's probably going to look like, but uh-huh. to them on paper, it's just like, are you sure this is the best approach?
Yeah, like, right. Well, and then like, you're kind of having a fist fight almost, right? Like, yes, this is the way to go about it. We do the same thing internally with our process for, you know, client onboarding and new websites is like we start with content, which people get really confused. They're like, wait a minute, why are we in a Google Doc right now? I thought you guys were going to generate a website. And it's like, yeah, we're starting with the words, right?
Right.
One of the things that we've used is like lighter weight design tools before you've gone to, like, and you kind of mentioned that, right? Get, you know, yes, we're going to get some documentation. Okay, we've got some buy-in. And then we put it into, you know, a mock-up. We use Figma, you know, here. What kind of tooling are you guys doing to maybe quickly iterate and show some actual artwork? Because it's really interesting. You can show people documentation all day long, and they might miss sections of the copy that they've already approved. And then the minute you show it in design, now their opinions are flying like crazy. What kind of tooling do you guys use to keep that design lightweight so that it's very easy to change?
Yeah, so we depending on the platform, we'll use Canva and we'll use Adobe. So for our intents, our creative manager, right? So she's all Adobe platforms, everything that she does. Mm-hmm. But our communications coordinator, she does everything through Canva. So so the quick stuff that needs to get out quickly, that we can get on brand still, that doesn't need to be as intense, or it doesn't need to be as thorough as what our creative manager will tackle. That'll be through Adobe. And obviously Adobe has many more moving parts. It takes longer to make your edits and your updates because you need a much higher skill set because the tool is just so dynamic. Whereas Canva is built for the basic, I am a communications person, but I still need to be able to do some stuff visually. So those are the two that we do the most. I know there's plenty of other ones out there.
Right.
But those are the two that we tackle.
Well, and Canva is a great example of like, I mean, it's a person like me can use Canva, right? Like I threw some stuff together this morning on Canva, right? And like, if I send it to my design team, they'd probably go, Alex, this is, what are you doing? You know, but heck, you know, like you got to quickly get some social posts out, right?
Right. So I actually, whenever I was first time trying to bring on Canva, I actually made the mistake of going to my designer at the time and saying, what do you think about bringing on Canva? And she's like, absolutely not. Like, cause I think from a designer's perspective, they're like, that like diminishes everything that I do and like how much talent it takes to be a great designer.
Right.
The efficiency and the simplicity of Canva. Right. So like somebody like myself too, I'm not a designer, but I could go into Canva and create some graphics. Right.
Right.
So from a designer's perspective, they're like, no, we gotta be in Adobe. So I was actually, we actually took a little bit longer to get around to it for both sides to agree on using both, because it's an efficiency thing too, because this, those simple graphics, it's not like she could be working on much bigger dynamic projects than some of these simple graphics for our social stories, right? We can knock those out quickly through Canva, simple. She can tackle the big stuff, right? It frees up her time to tackle more important projects too. So it's all, everybody wins.
Well, and you have to put some hierarchy into your content, right? Like if you spend, you know, 5 hours developing, you know, a graphic for a Facebook post, that's going to be a blip on your marketing, you know, activity, right? Like it's such a short cycle piece of content. I mean, Canva is perfect for that. At the same token, like if you're developing a website or a landing page or an ebook or whatever, absolutely put the time in because it's a bigger asset to your brand, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Whenever we're doing, you know, wireframing or what have you, you know, that's updates to our website. We just did a slight redesign of our website, and obviously that was much more intense, especially for the mock-ups whenever you're talking about approval of what it's going to look like. Mocking up our website before we make those changes and then communicating that. And then here's the reasoning why we need to make those changes and take on this time and expense of making our website look this way. And why does that matter? Well, why does UX matter? You know, like that's what you're essentially explaining. Why does UX matter? Why is it a thing? And it is, obviously, because right. you know, when somebody goes to your website, it needs to be simple, and you need to know where those call to actions are within your website so they can navigate to where they want to go and be engaged the entire time. So, and then understand who your company is all the way throughout that and what you're about. So that's a different type of dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, experience, I think that's a concept as well that you can explain to non-marketing people fairly quickly. I mean, they do get it and they don't get it, right? But, I mean, they understand that, like, yeah, the website needs to, you know, to get people to do stuff, right? I mean, like, an experience is how we get there. They may not know the technical details. It's kind of like watching baseball, right? Like, I know you want to hit a homer, or I know you want to strike the guy out, but then all the other intricacies of do they bunt and, you know, what are they, you know, all of that stuff is, you know, over people's heads to a degree, but they can still really, you know, tackle that user experience concept, right? I mean, or at least the jargon of it, right?
Yeah, at least know, well, why do we want to remove that button? Why does that make sense? Well, we always had that button in that place on that page. Why do we want to remove that? It can get as granular as that. And then, right. it's explaining throughout the entire, you know, because we're changing multiple pages, and right? And we need to have some sort of consistency throughout our website, or else, right, now the user doesn't know what is a button and what's not. Mm-hmm. Now it's like, are we going to create navigation problems because that looks like a button, but it's really not. And the colors are different on these different buttons. And they're like, what, like, right? Just something as simple as that, of just keeping the consistent look and feel and approach to how your call to actions look and work on your website and where they're placed. That can turn into a highly detailed conversation if you're going down that wrong rabbit hole. Whereas,
right.
And honestly, and as a marketing person, you really have to watch yourself that you're not getting frustrated. Because, like, maybe the message that you're sending, because, like, I know this is right, but it's not necessarily resonating when I'm delivering it, and making sure that it's, like, here, right, staying on point, staying detailed enough so the message that you're sending is the best result for the company and the team is what everybody's on board with, and everybody understands why. It's not just because the marketing team's saying so. Like, I say it sometimes, but I'm not reinventing the wheel here. I wish I was, because then I'd be, like, you know, probably making, you know, millions and millions of dollars on speaking.
Yeah, add another zero to my salary, please. Yeah. Well, to that end.
Yeah.
To that end, like, when you're oftentimes when you're showcasing the results of a campaign, right? You're letting the numbers talk for themselves, or that can be harder with user experience. Do you guys use any kind of you know, visitor tracking software or click mapping to kind of showcase, like, hey, this is how the website is today, and here's what users are doing, and this is why it's, you know, A, it's working, it's doing what we wanted them to do, or no, it's not working. Or do you just kind of use your analytics and tracking the visitor behavior through UTM and other elements like that?
Yeah, so we typically, and especially when you're communicating the results of your campaigns and why content marketing works, and showing, like, whenever we're not generating, well, here's how much content we're generating, here's our traffic.
Right.
Right. Here's how much more content we're generating, here's our traffic here. Look at it grow, right? Correlation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, they can see that, right? Yeah.
Right. Then you can see it, and it's a visual. So it's just analytics, right? So we just show, Here's the traffic here. Here's the pages with the most viewers, the most engagement. Here's the type of content that we're generating. Here's how they match up. Here's when we stop. Here's what happens when we stop generating that much content. Here's how it goes down, right?
Yeah.
And how do those things match up, right? Like, and why, this is why content marketing matters. And this is why it's like, it's a thing. Like, it's a huge tool in our field. And especially on the organic side too. So now you're not even spending quote advertising dollars. You're just generating really great content. You're giving people reasons to engage on that content. And then you're leveraging your audiences and your networks to expand your brand, which is so much more beneficial. It's harder to do than sponsored content, because you're paying to boost your own brand. But if you do it organically, that credibility is going to go up quite a
Absolutely.
Bit, because people are willingly engaging on your content and sharing it and reinforcing your message versus just getting a couple hundred likes on an Instagram post just because I paid for that to happen. There's no substance to that, because as soon as I take that advertisement down, my likes are going back down.
Yeah.
That's just, not, it's not going to hold. It's not sustainable unless you're just paying for it forever. It's good to, it's obviously good to sponsor content, obviously, but
it doesn't hurt.
As you're expanding
right.
your brand, the substance is behind the organic.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's like, you know, you can get lost in the vanity metrics, right? Like, oh, we got likes, or we got, you know, impressions on Facebook, but you know, it's time on page, and it's, you know, how many of those are organic, you know, click through on keywords that matter to our brand and have intent behind them, right? Which is, again, like a longer conversation to give to the non-marketing world, because, you know, oftentimes they like, well, we need to have 10,000 visitors today on the website. Well, actually, we need maybe 30 really, 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 you know, good visitors with the right kind of keyword that has intent, and we'll get the exact same value out of the traffic that's, you know, boosted Facebook content that's fluff, right? And that's harder to teach people to understand.
It's a harder. Go ahead.
Well, what are some tools that you guys use to analyze how you're doing organically? Are you just using Google Search Console? Are you investing in some other softwares or technologies that kind of help you create that picture?
We just use the basics, right? So we've done our research on all these different platforms to use. And at the end of the day, I mean, maybe this is, I know like we're talking innovation, we're talking technology and pushing this forward. But at the end of the day, I truly like, harnessing it through our own experience as much as possible. And that actually does create a little bit of work because mm-hmm. it's not as automated as through these platforms, right? It's not as automated through these technologies. But what we do is, because we're ever evolving our content, we're ever evolving our times to post and what we're posting and how often, and does it make sense to put this in a story? And if we create a link in the story, is it going to drive more traffic back to our page or not? Like all those finer details. Like I want to harness that as much as possible on our own side, so we can create our own charts, our own graphs, right? So we essentially harness our own data as much as we use the analytics through Facebook and Google and mm-hmm. those. And that's my approach, and that's probably like an old school like pen and paper type of approach a little bit too. But honestly, like whenever we track it for long enough, and as long as we have those details for long enough, that data is flawless, because we're tracking it our own activity ourself. Like there's no like, what does that data actually mean? Like that is like as concrete as our results can get, backed up through the analytics through the website. But like the analytics through the website, you can go nuts through that stuff too, and you can go down mm-hmm. such big rabbit holes. We what we do is we just boil it down to what matters to us. We track that hardcore on our end, and then we back it up with the analytics through those platforms. And that might be out. I don't know if that's outdated. I don't know if that's innovative or outdated.
Well, it's
one extreme or the other.
Well, like you can get lost in the fanciness of all these integrated systems, right? And then you can create pictures that aren't necessarily real either, right? Like, and I always preach at Webrick, like, you know, one visitor is, you know, conversions happen one at a time, right? It's not, you know, like if you get lost in like, well, we just need to put 1,000 people on the website and then we'll get, you know, one web form. It's like, well, you've missed the point, you know, like, you know, you can run marketing that way, but you have to be Pepsi, right? like if you're not Pepsi, you have to own your data, right? Like that's what you said there is really resonates with me, is if you own your data, understand your KPIs, your key performance indicators, it's a lot easier, and you don't need, you know, 16 marketing tools that are all Zapiered together to create an awesome, you know, dashboard. You can run this off of a spreadsheet.
Yeah, you can simplify it that much. I mean, you're obviously not going to be tracking as much data on your own. But to mm-hmm. me, like at the end of the day on LinkedIn, obviously followers matters, but at the end of the day on LinkedIn, engagement rate matters to me.
Yep.
That's it. Because the rest is all relative. Your impressions, mm-hmm. your shares, all that's going to go up as your followers go up. So if we build our followers and we maintain an effective engagement rate, we're going to be crushing it. So mm-hmm. where's our engagement rate? Is it the same as it was? Is our followers going up and our engagement rate staying the same? We're killing it. The other stuff doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Because that's what, like, if we maintain that, I know we're doing really well. And that's how much I boil it down and simple it down to. And that's what we track. Like, the impressions is great, but, you know, at the end of the day, if I have 60,000 followers or 600, right? Mm-hmm. My impressions are going to be much higher with 60,000 followers than 600. Right.
Yeah.
So it's absolutely all relative to the size of your account. So as I'm growing my account, right, mm-hmm. I'm not going to have as many impressions as that big account. So I need to know how to track my success as we're growing it. Or are we on the right track and are we doing well? So I'll compare my engagement rate with my competitors, with other people in Grand Rapids, with other people in Michigan, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, that's how I know it. That's all the same to everybody. Engagement rate is the same if I got 100,000 followers or 100, right? And it's much harder to achieve with 100,000, obviously. But if I can keep hitting my metrics as I'm growing my account and having a realistic metric on that engagement rate, now I know if I'm achieving my goals. And now I can have a tangible goal set for my marketing team as to what matters. Because like at them, like we didn't get that many impressions. That where was our engagement rate? 12%. Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. Or something like some high, ridiculously high number. I was like, that wasn't an unsuccessful post. So let's stay positive. It's a positive reinforcement tool too. So let's mm-hmm. stay positive behind it. That wasn't unsuccessful. Let's learn how we can be better behind it. Or maybe some post that we thought got a bunch of impressions had like 2% engagement. I'm like, guys, let's not focus on that too hard, because that didn't have the same level of success as we wanted to. We didn't hit our goal on that one. So it can bring it back down to earth a little bit on something that we think just blew up too. So it's both sides of it. And that's why
that's how
I approach it, but
yeah. Well, and you're talking about understanding your KPIs for your particular brand, right? And like every brand, some brands, maybe you do care about impressions, right? Like you can skin the marketing cat a number of ways. I mean, with Fifth Wheel and with what you're doing today, like what are some of the KPIs? We've talked about LinkedIn and social media. What are some KPIs for your content marketing on the website or on other social channels? Are you focused mainly on LinkedIn? I assume kind of in the B2B space or?
Yeah, so the B2B space is huge. That has the highest growth. That's why I hit on that. That has the highest growth potential in our industry, and it's going to resonate the most. It's also going to create the most credibility on our talent acquisition and our sales team too. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be able to be a tool for them to utilize to leverage their networks as they're trying to, you know, meet with people that can help, you know, either bring new talent onto the team or create new customer relationships. So I think that just has the biggest potential. But we push a lot of stuff to our website. We push a lot of stuff to our other social platforms, and we'll push a lot of stuff via email, like via MailChimp and what have you. So
email is great. Email
is great. I love MailChimp. And then, you know, we'll do simple feedback stuff like through SurveyMonkey. We'll just do like answer this survey just to get feedback from what's going on with a certain initiative that we're tackling as a company, as a data research tool, for just to get more data and more information. Are we doing right? Are you understanding our message? What could we be doing better? Are you using this tool? Whatever the question is, a simple one to three question survey just to gather more data. So to answer your question, the KPI is different per platform, right?
Absolutely.
If we do a release to our website, we'll have a KPI for that just based off of views and traffic to that page. And then we'll have a different KPI for LinkedIn, because then we'll share that release from our website to LinkedIn, traffic it back to our website. The KPIs on that would be different than the KPIs on our website. Would be different than the KPIs that we're trying to see result from an email marketing campaign, right? So on and so forth. And it's all relative. The whole thing is relative to what the campaign is and what our end result goal is. Like if we're doing an email marketing campaign focused on talent acquisition, that we're trying to generate interest on opportunities at Fifth Wheel Freight, how many appointments, so to speak, do you want to create out of it? Meaning like how many phone calls do you want the talent acquisition team to be able to set up as a result of that campaign? What is realistic? What do they want? And then how do those two things add up? And then that's your KPI
And then your KPI is directly tied to outcome, right? Versus the vanity metrics of, hey, we got, you know, 90,000 people to see this post. Well, but we got zero phone calls, so who cares, right?
Yeah, it's all outcome on that sense. It's all outcome. I care about engagement and outcome. Right?
Yep.
Are people clicking through to my website if I created a link? Are people engaging on my post? Am I getting the results I wanted from that? based off of mm-hmm. whatever the initiative was. For instance, setting up appointments for a talent acquisition marketing campaign via MailChimp.
Yep. Well, and speaking of talent acquisition, you mentioned that you just hired an entry. What was how is hiring for entry-level marketing kind of unique in a post-COVID world, right? Because, I mean, digital marketing has accelerated exponentially. How are you going about onboarding new team members?
Yeah, so the digital marketing space is very interesting in the recruiting world to me. Very, very interesting in the talent acquisition world and how that evolves and how there's companies now adding a specific role of a talent of digital marketing focused on talent acquisition. So it's mm-hmm. getting that specific and that sought after in the digital marketing space. We're not, you're not just going after customers. We're hiring you to run digital marketing campaigns that only focus on talent acquisition. Like that wow. to me is just that that's where we are right now as an industry and as marketers with the digital space. Mm-hmm. We just onboarded a new communications person within our marketing department. And I talk about this quite a bit because this is a very interesting subject to me and I don't know what's right and what's wrong, but I always mm-hmm. talk about entry-level marketing positions and why the 0 to 3 year experience entry-level positions don't exist. Like why that's not a thing. And how can we get as marketers get over the hump of needing the 3 to 5 years or onboarding somebody through an internship, because to mm-hmm. me those in between, and I think it can disincentivize people from coming into marketing because the integrating into our field is very difficult. So if you're not able to secure an internship where you can secure a full-time position out of it, now you have to go after these positions where everybody wants 3 years of experience and you have just had a year or two of internship experience. And you're going out, you're competing against somebody with 5 years experience from some big company, right? Wolverine Worldwide or something.
Right.
You have no chance.
Yeah.
You have no chance at all because you're qualified for maybe somebody who wants a year experience or two, not five, right. 3 to 5. And I get somebody who applies 5 or 6, guess who's getting a phone call, right?
Right.
And it's such an interesting topic to me because there's so many talented people that they end up in sales or they end up in a different field. They might even end up in talent acquisition to speak of it versus true marketing, because getting into our field from an entry-level person graduating college and you're super smart and you're motivated and then your motivation might get hit because those opportunities aren't out there. I don't know why that is. I'm not sure. I just think it's such an interesting thing to discuss because I don't think that barrier should exist. I think that barrier should be eliminated altogether. Why do we make kids do this?
Well, I think it's because the field is collectively so new and everybody is trying to make a major impact with it. So they are, I mean, I've seen like, job postings, channel manager, TikTok, 10 years experience. It's like, well, that's impossible. like TikTok hasn't been around that long, but people are, because they really want to have an impact in those positions because they do realize that, digital first marketing is no longer like, the kitsch thing to do. It's the thing to do. I mean, what we did at Webrick, we had a different problem with hiring development, right? Is we just started going to high school grads and just say, like, just come work for us. Don't go to college. We'll pay you. Right. And like, it's a different acquisition channel just because, we had to find talent and we changed the narrative for our company. Like, let's just find people that have no skill sets or maybe not no skill sets, but are malleable and willing to learn and train them up and teach them our program versus finding people that have 5 years or more experience and all the bad habits that come with that, right? Or preconceived notions and the like.
Yeah. Well, that's how I feel about it, because I think there's just so many talented kids. So mm-hmm. many talented kids that are super talented, but like they could be sophomores and juniors in college, super, super talented. That could be more than qualified to take on an entry-level communications role and do it at a high level,
mm-hmm.
but aren't given the opportunity to do that right away because of this barrier to get into the industry, get into the field and
right.
and why that exists. So I just think if you get somebody that's at that entry level, they just graduated, they came off an internship or two or whatever it is, they're going to be super hungry. They're going to be super motivated, right? And the other thing about it too, other than like you just had mentioned, they haven't developed any bad habits or very little bad habits from other experiences that you might need to try to change and mold. And maybe they're not even bad habits, but they're not the approach that you want to take. So now you're trying to take somebody from an approach they used to take and mold them into your approach, right?
Right.
Bring them on,
right.
Them onto your team too. That's another challenge. But I don't want to call them all naive on a professional level, but you're like at that age, you're naive from a professional standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. You don't know what you don't know yet because you've, right? So
yeah.
But what that eliminates is that eliminates uncertainty. And then like they're just gung ho and I'm just willing to go do this. So that motivation level, and I'm just willing to bounce new ideas out because I haven't done this for 5 years and realize what doesn't work. That leads to creativity, that leads to brainstorming, that leads to why aren't we doing this? Because they haven't even tried to do it yet. So they're like, why aren't you guys doing this?
Mm-hmm.
That's led to great ideas for us. Great ideas because they're just like, they're not afraid to try stuff because they haven't experienced campaigns that haven't gone so great or ideas that never took hold or any sort of hurdle they have to get over to create an end result, right? That whereas an experienced person might be a little bit more cautious before they bring a project forward. A young person might just be like, let's grip and rip, man.
Right. Well, and I said bad habits, but that's not even fair. It's just habits, right? Like an experienced player will show up with a playbook. You know, this is my 6-step approach that I will always do for developing a campaign. Whereas a younger person is like, I don't have a playbook. Like I'm just gonna start throwing spaghetti, which, you know, might slow the whole process down. But at the same token, like you get really interesting. That's actually how Webrick fell upon Figma, right? Like it revolutionized our onboarding process and sped up. You know, it does everything we want it to do, and it didn't. We were Adobe shop for a long time for our design, and then one of our new guys was like, "Dude, we should use Figma. It's so much better." And we were like, "Ah, let's check it out." Holy crap! This thing goes straight to React. It's way faster, and you know, it just came and like, and it was a JV player that like changed the varsity team, right? Like so. And you're absolutely right. Like so many people are overlooking the 0-3 experience gap,
and it shouldn't be that way. There's just zero reason. And I think my outsider perspective looking in, because I don't overlook it, as you can probably tell, I don't mm-hmm. overlook it, but an outsider looking in, I think there are larger organizations in particular, you see it a lot, that 3-5. I want 3-5. It's like a marketing specialist, but you need 3-5 years experience, right?
Right.
And my perspective on it is they don't want to take on the risk of an entry-level person holding back initiatives because mm-hmm. there might be some hand-holding going on because they don't actually know yet. They have to learn, or they might be making decisions that aren't exactly on point with where the organization needs to be because they don't have that 3-5 yet to know exactly the best approach or the best tactic, or they're not the most efficient to get a certain project done.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the same time, you're leading that risk on of this person doesn't have proven experience. Can they even truly do the job to the level we want to? And are we going to have to run into a situation where they're not the best fit for the organization? That's just I have no idea if that's actually right. But that's just an outsider's perspective looking in. And I think it's a cautious approach of, if you have that 5 years proven experience, I know you can do the job because you've proven it at mm-hmm. your other organization and I can see the results. So now I don't have to worry about it.
But it's a chicken or the egg scenario, because now you're looking for this unicorn person that has 3-5 years experience and isn't happily employed crushing it for somebody else, right? Like, and you have to open up the door, especially for entry level, right? I mean, I think you're absolutely spot on. I mean, like your logical approach to that is pretty straightforward, right? Like, we want results. We don't want to risk bringing on the wrong individual, and we certainly don't want to be 6 months into this position and find out it doesn't work for us. But at the same token, like what that also says is it's like the organization doesn't have the right quarterback maybe running the marketing department that they're hiring for, or the sales department that they're hiring for.
Right.
Because, I mean, in sales, it's super normal to bring on a greenhorn, right? Like, just throw them in there, right? And that's why sales has an insane attrition rate, right? Like if you ask any sales team, you know, what's the average tenure of a sales guy at your company? 9 months, maybe, you know, 9 days, you know, like those poor people. But they are sought after, and sales, like what, like 30% of the company revenue will go into sales, and then like marketing is we get like, you know, 4%, you know, like, but it's, if marketing were to pick some of that concept up, you know, it really does help, like what you're talking about, alleviate some of those problems of how do we quickly, you know, get new techniques and better content and more creativity into our department, and you know, just new blood and new ideas, right? I mean, that's a so you're actually categorically saying that there's two channels that you're, I mean, you guys are handling, obviously, you know, prospecting, you know, developing leads and prospects for your sales team, but then also just creating a digital funnel for talent acquisition. You guys are handling that internally.
So our big initiatives as a marketing team are talent acquisition is big, helping everything we can do is to supplement and help the talent acquisition team, sales. But so our company, and so we're a third party logistics company. So we have two sides to our sales team, if you want to call it that. There's the sales, which is customer focused, but then there's the operations, which is carrier focused, and they work together directly because we pair carriers with the best for shippers' needs, right? So a shipper will have a need to move a product from A to B, and we need to pair the best carrier with that to meet their needs, and then that's how our business works in layman's terms. So we work directly on the carrier side, we work directly on the customer side, the talent acquisition side, right? So there's three main focuses to our marketing team, which makes the demographics that we're targeting extremely widespread.
Widespread
because you want consistent messaging across all platforms, regardless of its talent acquisition, customers, carriers, from a general standpoint. And then how do you, as a marketer within an industry that the demographics are incredibly widespread from there, our customer base is, you know, the produce industry, but then we also have engineers and technology focused, and we have manufacturing. And the way that you communicate to a manufacturing company is in the same way they communicate to a produce company, right? So we have all these widespread demographics, and the way you communicate to the produce company obviously is completely different than what we're saying to the carrier. And then that's different than young people that we're trying to onboard onto our sales team, for example, right?
Right.
But it all needs to be the same at the end of the day, because everybody needs to understand who Fifth Wheel Freight is, what we stand for as a company, what they're going to get from their sides with partnering with us or working with us or whatever.
Right.
So it's very, very challenging. So we have those three main segments, but then there's so many small segments within the larger segments, and particularly on the customer side, because we don't cast a wide net. We cast, I say, we're throwing fishing lines. We're not throwing a big net and trying to get everybody. So we'll market directly towards a manufacturing company, right towards a produce company, versus trying to market towards both of them at the same time, because that's going to be very difficult to get that to work out the way that we want it to.
So then is your approach to do like micro sites and targeted landing pages with a social attention play, right? Like you capture attention on social, bring them onto landing pages that you guys are creating, and then getting them to convert there? Or are you converting them right on social platforms, or What's your favorite channel for doing that?
Well, depends on what. my favorite channel is by far it's LinkedIn.
Yep.
It has the most potential, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll direct right off. So let's go back to talent acquisition, right? So we'll direct right off our LinkedIn page directly to the page, right? We'll direct them right off our LinkedIn page, right to where we want them to go. So yep. What are we trying to get them to accomplish right off our LinkedIn page? Is that a customer that we're trying to get going to? For instance, we release market insights once a month, right? So this is industry focused information, and we want them to subscribe to a blog, right? We want them to hop onto our market insights, because this is industry focused information that if they retain, now we're talking about a retention tool for customers and carriers, because they're getting really good in-depth information through Fifth Wheel Freight. So this is, it's not,
and it's only, top of mind. It's top of mind.
It's not only an acquisition tool, but it's a retention tool because, hey, Fitful Freight provides me with these updates all the time. So again, I got to post that to LinkedIn. We'll link it back to whatever the page is. And then we'll have a call to action on our blog page to saying to subscribe. And then whenever they were to subscribe, now they're getting that directly to their inbox.
Yeah.
So that's so an example.
In other words,
I
most of your
a little bit there because I started on talent acquisition. I ended up on Market Insights,
but it made sense. Like, so your general strategy is, which is a solid one, right? Like, you know, build attention, build top of mind awareness through an email marketing kind of every week or month. You know, you send out newsletter, and that now I'm a manufacturer or I'm a produce guy, and I have to ship something. And Fifth Wheel Freight is in my inbox with regularity. I'm going to pick up the phone because, I mean, that's probably hard about freight is like rates change on a probably minute by minute basis. And who, you know, what truck are you going to put things on and how, where is it going? And you're probably not finding people that are, you're probably not like fighting for them on Google search as much as you're trying to get them before they're problem aware or before they're actually going to ship something. And then building a relationship with them through your content.
It's yes, that's absolutely right. So relationship building and credibility is so like you talk about acquisition, but like the retention side of it to me, and this is a little bit of a chicken and egg thing because you gotta acquire a customer, you gotta onboard a customer before you can talk about retention. But to me, retention is just as important, or probably in some respects more important than acquiring a customer too, because you want to build those relationships and maintain those relationships. So what can we do on our side? So we got to continuously build our credibility for, guess what? When Fifth Wheel Freight tells me rates went up, I believe them, right? I trust them and I'm buying, I'm going to continue working with them because they're looking out for me based off of something that even is negative towards my company, right? Because we have to deliver that message every now and again that rates are going up and the shipper doesn't want to hear that, but that's the truth at that time, right? The rates are going up and we're not going to, and then obviously when rates come down, then we're sending good news to the shipper because now their shipment is going to be a little bit cheaper. But like that's a credibility thing and that's a trust thing and that's a relationship thing. So when we continuously provide them with information on our industry that they now rely on us a little bit, but they trust us and they know that we have really good knowledge within our industry. And that reinforcement tool that we can use as marketers is huge for our company because it's, like I said, it's now when I talk to Ryan on the phone at Fifth Wheel Freight, I believe in what he says. I know he knows what he's talking about. So now we don't have to try to build up credibility from our sales team. Our sales team should have really good credibility on top of them based off of initiatives that we pushed too.
Yeah.
So that's another total different animal that we try to tackle, but
well, and I think that's especially in your industry, you know, where your shoppers are habitual, right? I mean, once they're comfortable using you, it's going to be harder, kind of like your dentist, right? Like it takes a lot of work to leave a dentist. Maybe not as much work to leave a freight forwarder, but I mean, that's kind of the idea, right? Is like once you acquire them and they know, like, and trust you and use you, they will, with regularity as they ship, pick you guys up and, you know, and so you have to, not only do you have to get them as a customer, but then you have to retain that top of mind awareness and till the soil and be good farmers, right?
And it's super challenging in our industry because the industry is so competitive, right? So there's so many, you have over 17,000 companies in our industry that are going after the same customers more or less, right? For the most part.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's some customers that are much larger that smaller companies just, they wouldn't be able to handle all of the shipments just because they're too small and so on and so forth. But for the most part, you got 17,000 companies that are all competing for the same freight, for all the same customers, for all the same sales, right? How do you differentiate yourself within that industry? Very difficult. And then whenever you're going through and the customer knows that Fifth Wheel Freight, I really trust them, but I really trust these other four companies too. So maybe I'm going to work with four companies at once to make sure all my shipments are moved and covered. And so we're still, even though we have acquired them as a customer, they're still using other companies.
Yeah, you're not taking their full spend.
For other parts of their needs too. So we're still competing and we still have to make sure that we're providing the best services. So how do we do that from a marketing standpoint to make sure our customers know, like, work with these guys. They're great people. They know what they're talking about. Like, whatever we can do to reinforce that the relationship and the credibility is there, will help maintain that and then help expand accounts to a certain point too, because I believe in Fifth Wheel Freight. These guys didn't treat me the way I wanted to, but Fifth Wheel Freight has always treated me well. Now maybe I'll help push a little bit more of my business to them as my service provider versus the company that maybe didn't treat me so well, right? And try to win more business that way too. And that's just a different way to approach it, but it's just so competitive that we have to do everything that we can to make sure that our customers know who Fifth Wheel Freight is, what we stand for, the best service that we can provide. You know, it's just, which makes my job awesome, because it's always trying to evolve. It's always trying to evolve that communication process and the content generation process too. Like, we need to keep generating great content so people know what we're about, like what's going on with Fifth Wheel Freight, right? So
yeah, well, and that's what content, I mean, that's the power of content, is it maintains attention and it builds relationships. I mean, you were spot on with that analysis.
I have a question for you. How about this?
Yeah.
What do you value more on content? Frequent content or great content?
Well, the best is great content frequently, right?
But right, but between the two.
Well, great content. I mean, for me anyway, I think it, I mean, you could make the argument depending on the industry, but for me, great content matters, right? Like, you have to provide a value. Otherwise, you know, the internet is becoming a dumpster fire of mediocre content. And so great content does cut through and maintains more attention than if you're, you know, but at the same token, like, if you're not out there with any frequency, you're also obscured by all of the other content that is flying out in front of people.
That's an ever-evolving discussion that we have, because I want frequent content all the time. I want every day, what are we pushing, right? That's me back there in my marketing department, just what are we pushing? But at the same time, we want it to be great. So at what point are we going to talk about, are we pushing this just to push it because we need content out? Or are we going to wait and not even push content right this minute and wait to generate something that's great content? But now are we missing out on possible engagement because we've got nothing out there? It's like, yeah. I don't know what the right answer to that is. And can we sacrifice the level of our content every now and again to make sure the frequency is there? And then when you got a great piece to supplement it, then you're doing even better. I don't know what the right answer is. I want consistent content all day, every day. But at what point do you start to sacrifice how great that is just because you're pushing stuff out all the time? And the last thing I ever want to do is force content, because that's the worst.
And that's the conundrum.
When you try to force it, it's bad every time.
Right. And that's the conundrum of modern marketing, right? Is like, if I'm not publishing, somebody else is. And if someone's not reading my content, they're probably reading somebody else's content. Oh, right. And it eats you alive, right?
It does.
Well, in wrapping up, what does the future look like for the way that you guys will kind of strategize and build your marketing plans around, let's just keep it on content creation. Are there, you know, like, as you look into the future, what are some things that you are really, you know, building as initiatives at Fifth Wheel?
Yeah. So the ever evolving, the evolution of our marketing department is built through, so it's built through content marketing, and eventually it's going to be, as we evolve so our technology is progressing as an industry, like, rapidly. And that means there's going to be more and more dependence on websites and applications, and just like plenty of other industries are, but our industry is even becoming more and more dependent on that, because they want user-friendly experiences, just like everybody else does. So the evolution of our company is going to be migrating from generating content for just to generate traffic to our website and just to generate goal completions on our website, to creating a need and an end result from our applications on our website, right? So now we're gonna how can we create technology that people come onto our website and utilize to create an end result? So that's a little bit different than just a goal completion. That's different than get signed up. That's different than get a quote. That's different than contact us. Now we're gonna be going on and having a true end result through our platforms, whether that be to sign up for our application in the future, whether that be to log into our portal as a customer where you have all these tools, whatever that looks like, I don't know, but that is the evolution of our industry. Some of our competitors are using some of the same ideas, so they're not new, and it's going to be a matter of, as we evolve, now we're going to be away from just simply trafficking our website and trafficking our blog page to trafficking these platforms on, and now we're seeing maybe even an end result on our website of not e-commerce, but a final result of the sale in some way, shape, or form, meaning the goal completion that has monetary value behind it, which obviously we currently, that's just not how we are operating as, for the most part, in our industry, right? So that's the exciting part about it. How that looks, how that evolves 3 years from now might look completely different than what I just told you. But the digital space and the technology space, backed up by great content marketing, is where we're headed, where we are, where we're headed, where we need to be. And it's just very exciting because we still do some old school tactics, man, of just the general deliverables that are PDF attachments, because get to know Fitzbo Freight and an email that I'm sending you from our sales team. But that needs to obviously evolve as our marketing strategies evolve too, right? When we're doing email marketing campaigns to drive that same message.
I'm excited to hear that. Yeah, digital service on demand, right? I mean, it's the whole world is heading that way, and it sounds like you guys are really paying attention. That's exciting to hear.
Yeah, and it's and marketing automation, and I know we don't dive into that too much, but marketing automation is obviously taking over our field as well. And marketing automation is whenever you got AI software that's generating campaigns for you, that's a whole different type of animal.
Now your consistency can be there, right?
Right. Yeah. It's like, I better be evolving, as a marketer myself. So, the computers don't take me over. So,
well, hey, thanks for being on the Headless Marketing Show. We really appreciate having you today. And, I'd love to follow up with you on where you are with some of the goals that you've just outlined. Cause, so many marketing teams are, really trying to figure out how do we create user experience that's more cradle to cradle in the sales process. And it sounds like you're right on the cusp of that. So appreciate having you on, Ryan.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great. I love talking marketing, so I'm always up for conversation.
Thanks for listening to the Headless Marketing Show. Be sure to keep coming back for more episodes and discussions with marketing leaders where we talk about e-commerce, digital marketing, and all things related to the web. Remember to subscribe to the Headless Marketing Show on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find and listen to your podcasts. Quick shout out to our sponsor, Webrick, by which all of this is made possible. If you are looking for a website, go check out webrick.com. And that's the show, folks. Thank you very much for listening.